Tati Course handed down a death sentence to an academic for using social media platforms as the kingdom intensifies its crackdown on dissent. The NATO chief says Ukraine can expect more Western heavy weapons soon, despite Russia's warnings that the move will only prolong the war. And thousands of health workers march in Madrid demanding the government stop dismantling public health services in favor of the private sector. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, a Saudi academic is now on death row for using social media as the Arab monarchy is tightening its grip on dissidents. A prominent pro-reform law professor, Awad al-Qarni, was arrested back in September 2017 as part of a campaign of arrests that included at least 20 people. His alleged charges include owning a Twitter account and using WhatsApp to spread messages deemed hostile to the kingdom. Human rights advocates warning that the regime is engaged in a new crackdown on free thinkers. That's while the Saudi government and state-controlled investors are raising their financial stakes in U.S. platforms like Twitter and Facebook. The use of social media has been criminalized within the country since the beginning of Mohammed bin Salman's reign. Iran is seeing a record rise in oil exports as the government's ramped up initiatives to nullify U.S. sanctions. According to companies that track the flows, Iranian oil exports hit new highs in the last 2 months of 2022 and are also making strong strides this year. Companies put the crude exports back in November at 1.2 million barrels a day, highest since August. China is Iran's biggest customer. The former U.S. administration has sought to completely wipe out Iran's oil exports by withdrawing from the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA and reimposing sanctions against the country. The current U.S. administration also says it is robustly enforcing the sanctions and has even imposed new bans. Iran has recently reported an almost 20% year-on-year increase in its non-oil exports. Palestinian Foreign Ministry has condemned as a heinous execution the Israeli killing of a man in the occupied West Bank. Ministry says Israeli leadership has made it easy for regime forces to kill Palestinians even if they pose no danger. Earlier in the day, Israeli forces shot dead 45-year-old Ahmed Kala in front of his son near the village of Selwad, north of Ramallah. Israeli army claimed he was killed while attempting to grab a soldier's gun and resisting inspection. Palestinian media, however, reported soldiers forced Kala out of his vehicle before shooting him at point-blank range. The man's son was also pepper-sprayed. Tensions have been simmering in the West Bank, with Israeli forces intensifying deadly raids across the occupied territories. At least 13 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the year, and last year's death toll of around 150 was the highest since 2004. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, tells us more about the Israeli latest killings in occupied West Bank.
Today, Israeli regime forces killed 45-year-old Ahmed Hassan Kahle. The Israeli story is that he tried to grab one of the soldiers' guns. But what usually happens is that Israeli soldiers attack Palestinians or attack their children. And as people defend themselves from the attack of Israeli soldiers, they get killed by other soldiers or the same soldier. So I'm not surprised if what happened today is that this 45-year-old man with his son, it seems like they assaulted him or assaulted his son. And while defending his child, Israeli soldiers took that action as an attack against them. And the reason for that, I believe, is that statements and the assignments made by the newly formed Israeli extreme right-wing government led by Benjamin Netanyahu, and also Internal Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, who continues to incite Israeli soldiers against Palestinians.
Israeli President Isaac Herzog has expressed deep concern over the growing protests held against the policies of the newly elected right-wing cabinet.
We are in the grips of a profound disagreement that is tearing our nation apart. This conflict worries me deeply, as it worries many across Israel and the diaspora.
Herzog said he is currently focused on averting a historic constitutional crisis and stopping the continued rift within the nation. Tens of thousands of protesters hit the streets of Tel Aviv last night, chanting slogans against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The demonstration was the biggest since Netanyahu's cabinet took office in late December. Now he returned to power at the head of a coalition with extreme right and ultra-Orthodox parties. Cabinet is planning to hand more powers to lawmakers in appointing judges and overriding the regime's Supreme Court decisions. It's also announced intentions to pursue settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank. The Western military alliance NATO has hinted about providing more heavy weapons to Ukraine in the very near future. The NATO Secretary General said new military aid is expected to follow Kiev's request to its allies for vehicles, artillery, and missiles. Jens Stoltenberg was quoted as saying ahead of a meeting this week of a group that coordinates arms supplies to Kiev. On Saturday, the UK also pledged to supply main battle tanks to Ukraine. Russia has time and again warned Western governments against their policies. Recently, a top Russian security official said events in Ukraine are not a clash between Moscow and Kiev, but a military confrontation between Russia and NATO. The West, the U.S. in particular, have provided Kiev with billions of dollars of arms and military equipment since the start of the war last year. And Belarus has also announced joint military drills with Russia, saying maneuvers started from Monday will be defensive in nature starting from Monday. Now, the country's Security Council says the two-week-long drills will focus on aerial reconnaissance missions and how to thwart a potential attack. Separately, the Defense Ministry has been quoted as saying situation on the country's southern border remains tense. It says the Belarusian forces are maintaining restraint and patience, but will be ready to deal with any provocation from Ukraine. A flurry of military activities in Belarus has triggered fears in Kiev and its Western backers that Russia could use its ally to launch a new ground offensive against Ukraine. Belarus became increasingly aligned with Russia after breaking away from the erstwhile Soviet Union in the 1990s. An explosion at an ammunition depot has killed three people and injured 15 in Russia's Belgorod region. Blast ripped through a former cultural center, which was used to store ammunition. Those killed and wounded are said to be draftees called up to fight in Ukraine under a mobilization drive. According to Russian media, incident was caused due to careless handling of a grenade by a senior army officer. Belgorod accommodates several Russian military bases and training grounds. City borders the northeast of Ukraine and is close to Kharkiv, which has been a flashpoint in the Russia-Ukraine war. Thousands of health workers have marched on Madrid streets protesting privatizing the public health system. Protesters demand the conservative regional government stop dismantling public health services in favor of the private sector. The Madrid municipal administration is led by the Popular Party, which has come under fire in recent years. Ralliers in central Madrid accuse regional authorities of poor staffing in hospitals and healthcare centers during the COVID pandemic. Now, leader of the Conservative Party has responded by blaming left-wing parties as the main orchestrators of the strikes to win the upcoming election. The British government is set to put forth new proposals to quell public protests by giving police more powers to prevent serious disruption. Now, the government passed legislation to address the issue last year, but it is planning to go further with a new set of laws known as the Public Order Bill, which is being debated in Parliament. The government wants to amend the bill before it becomes law, and that in order to broaden the power of police to deal with demonstrators who block traffic or lock themselves to objects or buildings. Protesters in recent years have caused inconvenience in many cities, prompting calls for the police to intervene. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has defended the new proposal, saying that protests by a small minority should not affect other citizens. Civil rights groups, however, warned the legislation will be against democracy if passed by Parliament. And earlier in our news review program, we discussed the strikes in the UK that have been ongoing since summer. Here's a replay of the program.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The UK is bracing for fresh nationwide strikes as workers from various sectors are demanding higher wages amid a cost of living crisis. The Royal College of Nursing Union has warned of more walkouts next month if talks with the government do not progress by the end of January. The union says that it will be more severe, involving twice as many workers. Meanwhile, teachers will hold a ballot on Monday over industrial actions. If their strikes are confirmed, it will add to the disruption experienced in the country over the last 6 months. Ambulance staff and rail workers are among those staging back-to-back walkouts as pay rises have failed to keep pace with the double-digit inflation. Earlier this week, the UK government introduced an anti-strike bill to Parliament that requires some union members to work even during strikes. Syed Purizar is our correspondent joining us from London. We also have Steve Keen, who's an economist and author, joining us from Amsterdam. Welcome to you both. Syed Purizar, so give us a wrap-up about these strikes in terms of what we're looking at, the various sectors, and when they will be happening.
More strikes are planned, Kaveh, for the coming weeks and month, no doubt, starting with what you just read, the RCN, the Royal College of London, saying they will be planning a much bigger one in February. I understand it's going to be on February 6th to correspond with a survey that came out 10 years ago on the impact of nurse shortages on patient mortality. Earlier, we heard from the RCN General Secretary, Pat Cullen, that they would agree after the government gave them some kind of optimism that a deal was reachable within reach, that they would agree to 10% pay rise compared to the 19% that they have been asking for. That didn't happen, as we saw on Monday last week, when those negotiations between the government and the unions fell through 45 minutes into the meeting, followed by that bill that requires six industries to have their workers work or provide minimum service on strike days or face losing their jobs, that has had all the different unions up in arms. So that's the RCN. Of course, Wednesday, 55 NHS trusts that were not part of the previous round of NHS strikes will be walking out. You're looking at tens of thousands of people walking out of their jobs, followed by railway workers, as well as you said, teachers will be balloting tomorrow, their union saying that if they don't vote for a strike action to give them the mandate to do so, they will ask their members to vote again so that they can go on strike. Then you have ASLEF, the train drivers a union, who have been saying that the government has offered them 8%, that their general secretary, Mick Whelan, saying that he didn't see one line in the government's offer that he supported. And that tells you how determined these unions are to continue with their industrial action in the days, weeks, and months ahead. And as they said last week, that they are in it for the long haul, to borrow a term from the transportation industry. And so they're very determined. The government is also being recalcitrant, as all the different unions have been saying. But there seems to be some kind of optimism as far as the RMT and the TSSA, the RMT, the Railway Maritime and Transport Union, that they might come to some kind of a deal with the rail employers, but we'll have to see. You can't really put a definitive timeline or timetable on any of this unless and until they come out with an agreement. We're going to see those negotiations resume this week, and the outcome of that we will have to wait and see. But if they don't, then, as I say, we're definitely going to see more strikes crippling the different industries in the coming days, weeks, and perhaps months coming.
Well, Steve Keen, when we take a look at this, obviously there's got to be the talks, and whether they're going to reach an agreement or not remains to be seen. Your thoughts on that? But overall, then the question comes about whatever agreement that is reached, if there is going to be any agreements, is where the money's going to come from.
Well, the money is created by the government. This is one of the most frustrating things about how people think about the government spending. The government is one of the two money creation systems in a modern economy. Banks create money by lending out more than they get back in repayments. Governments create money by running a deficit, spending more than they get back in taxes. They can simply decide to create the money. and they do not borrow from the public. They do not borrow from the banks. They sell banks bonds in return for reserves, which are also created by the deficit. So the government is hamstringing itself by its own lack of understanding of how money is actually created.
Doesn't that mean that if they do that, that would maybe contribute to inflation or no?
Well, inflation has happened without them doing it. So let's just get that start. First of all, it's other factors which have contributed to the inflation, partially the increasing cost of energy and the lengthening supply chains. And also, when there was a large amount of government money creation during COVID, that took the pressure off manufacturers and enabled them to put larger markups in there. But a large part of the cost that England is bearing are coming out of the fact that it's let its manufacturing sector run down. And if there's a fall in the currency, then it pays that way as well. So this is a whole a cacophony of failures by the government. First of all, understand what it does, and then doing the wrong thing anyway.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, Saeed Pourreza, our correspondent there talking to us from London, and Steve Keen, a pleasure, economist and author from Amsterdam. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review.
In the United Kingdom, a man's been arrested as part of a counterterrorism probe after traces of uranium were found in a cargo package at London's Heathrow Airport. Police say the man in his 60s was detained on Saturday in northwest England and later released on bail until April. They say incident does not appear to be linked to any direct threat to the public. According to British media, though, package was found on December 29th and it had originated from Pakistan on a flight from Oman. Investigations are still underway. Uranium can be used for civilian power generation and scientific purposes and is a key ingredient in nuclear weapons. Certain isotopes emit radiation that can be harmful to humans, and the metal itself is toxic if ingested or inhaled. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Most Americans do not accept President Joe Biden's explanations about the real reasons behind the increasing costs of living and say his administration has performed poorly in managing the U.S. economy. The U.S. president claims that Russia is responsible for the increase in the price of oil, gas, and foodstuffs, but new opinion polls show the weak performance of his administration and Biden's misguided domestic and foreign policies have created economic hardship for the American people. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Wall Street Journal has covered this story and tells us more. The latest Wall Street Journal poll shows a majority of voters think the economy will be in worse shape in 2023 than it is now, and roughly two-thirds say the nation's economic trajectory is headed in the wrong direction. The survey conducted between 3 and 7th of December suggests, despite U.S. official claims and statistics that the economy is in good shape and that inflation is under control, their figures and claims haven't altered the way many feel about the risk of a recession, something many economists have forecast as likely. Republican poll participant David Rennie, a 61-year-old retired executive with the Boy Scouts of America who lives in Shelton, Connecticut, said, "I just think we are headed toward a recession, and it could be a pretty big one. Interest rates are skyrocketing, and that's going to take us down." The U.S. Federal Reserve on Wednesday, 14th of December, approved an interest rate increase of 0.5 percentage point and signaled plans to keep raising rates at its next few meetings to combat high inflation. The move reflected some moderation after 4 consecutive increases of 0.75 percentage points each. Economic pessimism is strongest among Republicans, with 83% expecting the economy to worsen. Slightly more than half of independents feel that way, while 22% of Democrats feel that way as well. Democratic pollster John Anzalone, who conducted the survey with Republican pollster Tony Fabrizio, said, "Our economic diagnostics have become partisan. If there was a Republican president, we might see the reverse." Tony Fabrizio said Democrats aren't paying as much of a political price as one might expect for so many people having negative feelings about the U.S. economy. He said, "You would normally see that translate into big bad news for the Democrats. Younger voters are more pessimistic about the economy's prospects next year than older voters. Roughly 6 in 10 of those aged between 18 and 34 expect it to be worse over the next year, while 42% of those aged 65 and older feel that way." Democratic poll participant Kendra Lewis, a 38-year-old business consultant and entrepreneur who lives in Fayetteville, Georgia, said she is already seeing some of the small business people she works with act as if they are in a recession. Kendra Lewis said, "I've seen a drastic contraction in what people are willing to spend. When entrepreneurs are scared to invest and expand, that trickles down to a lot of other things in the economy." Lewis said even if inflation slows to a more normal level, she expects it will take some time to undo some of the trauma people have experienced in the economy during the past year. She said, "It takes time for consumer confidence to be rebuilt." The website Bankrate has also covered the same story. Whether it's the hottest inflation in 4 decades or this year's abrupt end to the lowest borrowing costs ever, Americans' finances haven't had it easy in 2022, and most aren't expecting their wallets to feel any better in the new year. According to a new Bankrate poll, about 2 in 3 or 66% of the American public do not expect their personal finances to improve in the new year 2023. That total includes 36% who expect their financial situation to remain about the same, along with 29% who expect their finances to be worse. Slightly more than 1 in 3 Americans, or 34%, have hoped that their personal financial situation will improve in the new year. The findings highlight next year's rocky economic outlook, as experts warn of an increasing likelihood of a recession amid the Federal Reserve's rapid rate hikes. high inflation on everyday essentials such as gasoline, housing, and food is also biting into Americans' purchasing power. Also, Americans had varying degrees of concern about their personal finances heading into 2023. Of the 29% expecting their finances to get worse in the new year, 18% see their finances getting somewhat worse, while 11% are bracing for their finances to worsen significantly. White Americans are more than twice as likely as Black Americans to expect their finances to get worse next year, 32% compared to 15% respectively, while 27% of Hispanic Americans expect their wallets to worsen. At the same time, 51% of Black Americans expect improvement versus 30% of white Americans and 37% of Hispanic Americans. The Americans who do not expect their finances to improve next year are overwhelmingly pointing fingers at inflation. More than 3/5 or 63% say continued high inflation will be the reason their finances do not improve, more than any other category, including the work of elected officials, 29%, stagnant wages or reduced income, 27%, and changing interest rates, 25%. The MarketWatch website has also covered the same story. A Gallup opinion poll shows over half of U.S. households say inflation is causing them hardship, a figure that has barely changed throughout the past several months. According to the opinion poll, which was conducted among more than 1,800 American adults during November, 55% of Americans said rising prices have created financial problems for their household. Its results were published on Tuesday, 13th of December, a month after the Labor Department announced that prices across the country had shot up 7.7% compared to the previous year. The Labor Department put the increase down to higher costs of shelter, food, and energy. Gallup said the November figure had essentially remained unchanged since last August. Jeffrey Jones, senior editor at Gallup, said in a post for the polling firm's website, "The fact that Americans' self-reports of financial hardship are leveling off rather than declining, is likely to reflect just how much prices have risen over the past year and how much further inflation needs to subside before most Americans no longer feel burdened by it." Jeffrey Jones added, "However, the figure was notably higher than the 45% of Americans who said they were in the same boat a year ago." The survey also found that 77% of lower-income respondents were financially suffering from price increases, compared to 60% of middle-income adults and 42% of upper-income adults. It identified lower-income families as households, most of whose money goes towards rent and have a hard time paying their bills. Of the lower-income respondents, 28% said they were experiencing severe financial hardship, which Gallup described as affecting one's ability to maintain your current standard of living.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are. However, this growth and upbringing has a major play by parents. And in this program, we try to guide the parents how to take the proper steps to upbring their children in, under the umbrella of Islam. And the answers to your questions, issues are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dear listeners, Professor Nakavi is a researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom and also a faculty member at Al Mustafa University. So one of the parts of the environment you said is a virtual world. Now a teenager is put in front of a virtual world, and as you said in previous episode, it's becoming very, very dangerous. Now how do parents help their teenagers to control over this virtual tech, virtual environment that they are in relation with?
Actually, we need to start from the natural world, the natural world.
Okay.
There, as you mentioned, that we need to somehow engage ourselves and our family and our children and make them go out into the natural world. I mean, there's so much beauty out there. Unfortunately, because we have not been, especially in the lives which we have in the cities today, the mechanical life, so fast moving life, everything is moving so fast, you cannot control things. We cannot give time. We do not give time to ourselves, to our children. As Allah Almighty says, as the Imams have said, that divide your lives into three or four parts.
Yeah.
One of them should be for recreation, for refreshment, for enjoying.
Your leisure time.
Leisure time, so that you can benefit from that and get energized for carrying out your duties in the other two or three parts of your lives, daily lives. So we're not doing that. We're not engaging with our family. We're not engaging with our children. We're not taking them into the environment.
Real environment.
I mean, I remember in our school days, school times, school would take us out into the parks, into the forests. We would collect things. We would collect mushrooms. We would collect stones. We would collect pebbles.
Sticks, anything.
Anything. I mean, it was
fun.
A recreation, fun. And then we would be asked to draw them and... Now everything is, look at the computer, find things there and...
Start drawing.
So this is a problem. The connection between the natural world is being disconnected. And beyond that, the connection with the supernatural world is being disconnected. That is the most difficult thing. Now, even if we are to replace the natural world with the virtual world or the physical world, as I again stress, this virtual world is physical.
Yes,
we should not mix it up with the supernatural or something which is beyond that.
Okay.
Virtual reality is a physical reality.
Okay, so virtual world is also a real world.
But again, the same roots have to be taken. I mean, we have to take ourselves back to the roots, that this is also a manifestation of Allah's knowledge and power.
Yeah.
Not only the heavens and the skies and everything which is out there in the celestial bodies or within the human being and his soul, even the creation of the internet, of the virtual environment,
as we said in last episode, even the ant, even a small ant, you can see so many things. Like,
exactly.
My son was scared when he got into the gallery and saw the pictures, zoomed in pictures of an ant, and he saw, what are you doing with your mobile? And why are you taking pictures of ants? And I was telling him, I just want to go closer to Allah. I just want to know him. And then he started asking questions. How can an ant take you back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? And then I started explaining for him and that this small, very minute creature, I want to zoom in, I want to see the structure, and I am amazed to see this organization and just this very horrific, terrible face of an ant. And you get just terrified. But still, the same ant is not making any danger to you. It's not dangerous for you. It's not making any, it's not making any harm for you. We'll discuss more on the topic with you, Professor Nakavi, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Nakavi, and we are discussing the virtual world and a teenager's relationship with it. Well, Professor Nakavi, today you said that virtual world is not in the control of the right hands, and anything gets popped in, and you got to be very careful about your teenager. Do you think monitoring things on virtual world is also very essential while your teen is busy on the internet or the social media stuff? You got to monitor things.
Yes, we need to monitor them, but of course the immunization should take place from within. We should create immunity within him, within his thoughts and feelings. And
so even if you're not there, he should be able to...
Yes. He should be able to manage his thoughts and feelings properly. That is what we should teach to him or her. The problem is that whatever safeguards which we can provide, even the companies which are selling these products, they give you ways and means how to control, how to limit or whatever. But today the children are so fast in learning these things, they even outpace us. We can never manage them.
They do.
They are so fast in learning these things. They, whatever lock you make or whatever controls you put in, they, if they want to, they can break them.
So all goes back to want.
Exactly. So,
how do we manage that want and need in them?
So it starts from again, going back to the basics, ourselves, how we manage our thoughts and our feelings, how we develop that mindset, how do we develop that ideology. What worldview are we giving them? If our lives as parents is completely, our lives are engrossed completely in material gains and material benefits, and we're all the time talking about how to make money and how to make personal gains, then certainly our children will be doing the same thing. The most important thing is what we're doing and how we are creating that linkage with the supernatural world. Supernatural means not something which is magical or the occult. It's something very natural in the sense that it is something which is before us.
Okay.
Allah Almighty is before us. We are before Him. This mindset has to be created. The love of Allah has to be created. In each and every manifestation of Allah, we have to remind ourselves and praise Allah Almighty. We drink, we should praise Him. We eat, we should praise Him. We start clothing ourselves, we should recite Bismillah. We start bathing ourselves, we recite Bismillah. I mean, this Bismillah is verbal, but it is enforcing that feeling within us. So it starts from us, it starts from the education and upbringing which we are giving to our children, and developing our own understanding of the world and trying to infuse that into our children is important. Today, even when we talk about science and technology, we're talking about the applications. We lag much behind in the development of the software or applications which we can give our children and provide them as alternatives. I mean, today, there's no alternative to a beautiful film or a cartoon which is talking about some story. It's so attractive. It captures your mind. You cannot replace that with just teaching them dry and subjects of Islam and Islamic teachings. You have to develop things to through which we can infuse those mindset.
We should have a better alternative. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm with Professor Nagavi, and we're saying that your children, your teenagers, got to be connected to alternatives when they are encountering wrong things on virtual world.
So one of the ways is to develop habits and hobbies which are connected with the natural world. For example, collection of items which are there in nature, handicrafts, making. I remember we used to, for example, go for swimming. We used to go for example, canoeing or going into boats, making boats, trying to make things from the natural world. I mean, there are so many things which can be done.
Yeah, you have talked of some very beautiful alternatives that you have went through in your childhood, and today they are lacking. I would like to ask more. Professor Nagavi, what is it that existed in your childhood and that was a better thing, that was a better alternative, which is absent in today's child's age?
I remember we used to visit many places with our places of natural history, places, museums of natural history, museums.
Monuments.
Monuments. Go into the past history with our parents. They would take us.
Historical places, museums.
Yeah, we need to develop an attachment with our culture, with our environment, with our history. Today, our children are completely detached from their history, from their background, from whether we are living in our own homelands or we are living as expatriates in other places. We are completely disconnected from our backgrounds, from our history. I mean, when we used to visit places of historical importance, we would be awed by the environment of the past. Or we would go to places where we look into the future. So, I mean, there's so much to do, but unfortunately, this world is not up today.
Allowing us. So you're trying to say that although virtual world provides us much, much, much information, but our child, our teenager, is not authorized to be CPU of an information. He has to see those informative things in person. He has to get out into the environment. He has to visit the historical monuments, the places, and different things in person, physically, rather than just have a gathering of information about them.
Technology will help us.
Yeah.
And it will provide us guidance. For example, let me give you an example of my grandson. There's a sky map. There's an application, a sky map. It shows you all the stars.
Wow.
Now, if you look at that, that's wonderful. It's very comprehensive. But I need to take my grandson out and look. You saw that in the application?
No, come out at night.
Find it at night. So this is important, the combination between technology.
So both have to go hand in hand.
Technology cannot be removed, cannot be restricted. It has to be channelized in the proper way and managed in the proper way. So it doesn't give us the negatives which are attached to it. We can't do much about that till there's a complete change in the mindset of mankind. Today, we have the dark web, the very dangerous form of the web, which is called the dark web. Now, God forbid, if our children get into that, that is a very dangerous place. Narcotics and pornography and so many things which one should be ashamed of.
Yeah.
But that is a...
They're just coming in, popping in.
It's there. We need to defend ourselves. We need to inoculate our children.
Yeah.
So we need to...
So you're saying that more than monitoring your child, you got to develop an insight within him that he himself stays away from all these things, even if they are just popping in, even if he's watching everything is in his excess without you. Thank you so much, Professor Nakavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
California Congressman Adam Schiff said that he believes there is sufficient evidence to criminally charge former President Donald Trump in relation to his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. California Congressman Adam Schiff said on Sunday that he believes there is sufficient evidence to criminally charge former President Donald Trump in relation to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Adam Schiff's dramatic statement on CNN's State of the Union program came just one day before the House January 6 Select Committee, to which he belongs, is poised to release an outline of its extensive investigative report on the U.S. Capitol attack, which has been linked to 9 deaths, including the suicides of traumatized law enforcement officers. The committee is expected to use its last meeting on Monday to refer Donald Trump, as well as others, to the U.S. Justice Department in relation to the former president's attempts to reverse his 2020 defeat to Joe Biden. During this final meeting, the House panel is expected to outline an executive summary of its findings, propose legislative recommendations, vote to adopt the report, and then vote on possible criminal and civil referrals. Adam Schiff is one of 9 members, 7 of whom are Democrats like him, serving on the January 6 committee. The potential referrals involving Donald Trump are expected to involve obstruction of an official congressional proceeding, as well as conspiracy to defraud the United States. The Guardian first reported the nature of these referrals. Adam Schiff told CNN host Jake Tapper that he can't comment on specifics of any possible referrals. The predicted criminal referrals are effectively symbolic because Congress can't force prosecutors to pursue charges. I think that the evidence is there that Donald Trump committed criminal offenses in connection with his efforts to overturn the election, said Adam Schiff, who chairs the House Intelligence Committee. Adam Schiff added, "And viewing it as a former prosecutor, I think there's sufficient evidence to charge the former president." CNN host Jake Tapper asked Adam Schiff whether this was enough to secure a conviction. "Well, I don't know what the Justice Department has. I do know what's in the public record. The evidence seems pretty plain to me, but I would want to see the full body of evidence if I were in the prosecutor's shoes to make decision," Adam Schiff responded. "But this is someone who in multiple ways tried to pressure state officials to find votes that didn't exist. This is someone who tried to interfere with a joint session of the Congress, even inciting a mob to attack the Capitol. If that's not criminal, then I don't know what it is." Asked whether he thought Donald Trump would face criminal charges, Adam Schiff said, "The short answer is I don't know. I think that he should face criminal charges. I think he should face the same remedy, force of law, that anyone else would." Adam Schiff said he was worried, however, that it may take until he is no longer politically relevant for justice to be served. "That's not the way it should be in this country, but there seems to be an added evidentiary burden with someone who has a large enough following. That simply should not be the case, but I find it hard otherwise to explain why, almost 2 years from the events of 6th of January 2021, and with the evidence that's already in the public domain, why the Justice Department hasn't moved more quickly than it has," Adam Schiff said. The Guardian previously reported that Trump allies who might face criminal referrals include former high-ranking White House staffers. The panel is also expected to make civil referrals to the House Ethics Committee involving Republican Congress members, as well as suggest disbarment of some of Donald Trump's attorneys. The January 6th committee has largely concluded that the insurrection was rooted in a conspiracy, sources previously told Guardian. The panel, the House panel, found that Donald Trump oversaw a political plan for his vice president, Mike Pence, to refuse to certify election results in a joint session of Congress on 6th of January 2021, as well as a coup plot to force Congress's hand if he refused. Committee investigators think that Donald Trump's alleged desire to illegally thwart the certification of the election he lost was obvious months before 6th of January 2021. They believe it extended from the time he agreed with a fake electoral plot so states would swap Biden's Electoral College votes for him until he refused for hours to call off Capitol attackers. Donald Trump did not leave documentary evidence of his alleged involvement, but his staffers left a paper trail. During Trump's presidency, he used his power to stifle inquiries, the House committee is expected to say. NBC News has also covered the same story. Representative Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California, said on Sunday that the House January 6th committee has evidence that former President Donald Trump broke the law, but he declined to get specific about the criminal referrals it could make ahead of the House panel's final meeting on Monday. In an interview on CNN's State of the Union program, Adam Schiff, a member of the committee, cited multiple efforts by Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election, including pressuring state officials to go along with his false claims of widespread election fraud. "If that's not criminal, that I don't know what is, he said. Adam Schiff, however, declined to comment on the possible referrals the committee could make, saying the panel is set to vote on them and will reveal its decision on Monday, as well as release its final report this month. But I can tell you that our process has been to look meticulously at the evidence and compare it to various statutes. If there is sufficient evidence as to each element of a particular crime, he said, we are not referring, or at least won't be voting to refer anyone we think there may be evidence, because we want to focus on those for which we believe there's the strongest evidence. The committee, which has been forecasting the possibility of referring Donald Trump to the Justice Department for a crime, is actively considering charges of insurrection, obstruction of an official proceeding of Congress, and conspiracy. While all three charges are possible, the House panel has not yet made a final decision, three sources involved in the committee's deliberations said last week. The potential recommendations are not necessarily reserved for Donald Trump, and they could also include referrals to other government agencies or to the House Ethics Committee. California Congressman Adam Schiff reiterated that he thinks Trump violated multiple criminal laws and should be prosecuted like any other American who breaks the law. Asked whether the House panel will refer members of Congress who ignored subpoenas from the panel to the Ethics Committee, Adam Schiff said its decision on the appropriate remedy for those lawmakers, who include Representatives Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, and Scott Perry, a Republican from Pennsylvania, will also be made public on Monday. We have weighed what is the remedy for members of Congress. Is it a criminal referral to another branch of government, or is it better that Congress police its own, he said, adding that the House panel has considered censure and ethics referrals.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.